eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. You guys know I'm always up for a good MVP story, and one of the best stories is Wasabi Technology. Wasabi is the world's hottest cloud storage company, and it's become the go-to provider for professional and collegiate sports teams, including 20 Major League Baseball teams like the Red Sox and NHL teams like the Bruins and Vancouver Canucks. Even the Liverpool Football Club is getting in on the Wasabi action. So why is Wasabi the MVP? Well, Wasabi was purpose-built to free businesses from skyrocketing storage costs and unpredictable transaction fees that the Amazons of the world are charging. In fact, Wasabi is up to 80% less than those hyperscalers and doesn't charge a cent for businesses to access their data. From Wasabi's AI-enabled intelligent media storage, Wasabi Air, to the industry's only cloud storage service with triple protection against cyber criminals, data deletion, and ransomware, Wasabi's taking the lead in driving innovation in data storage and helping sports teams to unleash the power of their data. Wasabi, another Boston-based championship team.
Odyssey Sports presents Big Time Baseball with MLB insider John Heyman and former major leaguer Tony Gwynn Jr.
We're past the halfway point in August, and races are starting to heat up. We got three car races in the National League East, and all of a sudden things may look a little bit brighter for the Red Sox in the American League East. We're going to get into it all, but first let me welcome in my original partner, John Heyman. John, how you doing, man? It's been a little bit of time since we've been able to do one of these again.
I'm good. I guess they gave me the break to do the deadline. I appreciate that, Dylan. Thank you very much. It's great to be back with you, Tony, and let's talk some baseball.
Let's do it. Well, I should start with out west with the Padres, who are all of a sudden not playing that well and are a victim to the eighth no-hitter of the season, tying a major league record. Tyler Gilbert, in his first outing in the big leagues, throws a no-no against the Padres. And this it's been phenomenal this year, John, to see the amount of no-hitters thrown. We got off to a really fast pace. It slowed down, but nevertheless, here it is tied in August.
Incredible. And give Gilbert credit. He's 27 years old. This is his debut. Amazing. First guy to throw a no-hitter in his debut since Bobo Holloman. That's before your time, Tony. And believe it or not, that's
certainly
even before, my time. So by 8 years. 8 years before I was born, Bobo Holloman threw a no-hitter in his debut. So great story. It's good to see. The Diamondbacks have a nice day. It's been a rough year for them, obviously, but was fantastic. And by the way, before we continue on, I've got a little quiz for you, Tony. What do these four names mean to you? Verlander, Sanchez, Millwood, and Beckett.
I was all on the opposing side of their no hitters.
You're good. You have a good memory. You're very smart. We, Dylan and I did, well, Dylan actually did the research. I didn't do anything, but, you have a good memory. Yes. Four different teams, Milwaukee, San Diego, Dodgers, and Phillies. You were on the wrong end of, no hitters. So, you're quite familiar with no hitters.
Very too familiar with no hitters, actually, John.
I'm sorry,
and I can say at least on one of those I had no participation in. And the Verlander one, We were, I was a rookie. It was in the American League. So we're playing with a DH. So there was no need for a pinch hitter at that point. And, quite frankly, the way he was throwing it, I was glad I didn't get a shot that day. But
yeah, you never know. That manager made a mistake. I think he would have gone 3-for-4 that day against Verlander.
Maybe
Tony. Big mistake. Maybe. Who was that manager? Was that Maka? No, who was that?
It was Ned Yost.
Ned Yost, right?
Yeah, that's very possible. I could have got some knocks, but I wasn't a part of it. Now the other three, Sanchez, the combined no hitter with Millwood and company with the Mariners. And what was the other one?
Beckett
was the other one. Yeah, yes. That one. Yeah, I participated in all of those, so I can't slide away from those. But
all right, it's still an accomplishment to be in those games anyway. No doubt.
But certainly Tyler Gilbert's has got to be the coolest of the no hitters so far because, as you mentioned, first start, his dad's in the crowd, his family's in tears as he gets it done, and I heard him say. On a show the other day that he didn't actually have his best stuff. He credited his teammates to show you the type of character. He credited his teammates for making plays because, to be quite honest, Padres hit some balls hard that game. It just they had made tremendous plays or they were hit right at somebody.
Yeah, they're running into some bad luck as you've seen lately. They've with injuries and other things. So good for the young man to say that. One thing I noticed about the no hitters. And Al Leiter pointed out on MLB Network is that it's not the guys throwing 97 and above.
That's right.
Throwing these no-hitters. I mean, Miley threw a no-hitter. I mean, he barely hits 90. The only one who had a better-than-average fastball was Rodon, who threw a no-hitter of the eight. I guess Kimbrel finished off the combined no-hitter. Obviously, he has a way better-than-average fastball, but that game was started by Zach Davies. And, of course, you had Means, who has maybe a tick above average fastball, about an average fastball. But the other ones were Miley and his ilk throwing the no-hitters. So it's a little bit unusual to see. It wasn't Verlander and Beckett throwing the no-hitters this year.
Yeah, no, I mean, guys who have learned how to pitch get a lot of outs. And to their credit, they've been able to do it. Now, on the other side of that no-hitter were the Padres, who had really struggled. But got a shot in the arm yesterday from Fernando Tatis Jr. He returned as a right fielder, goes 3-for-4, a double, 2 home runs, looked healthy. And I tell you what, the Padres haven't played well, especially against the Diamondbacks and the Rockies. But it's really set up for him to come in and put a stamp on this MVP race. Should he come back? And this team start to win ball games, and he continues to play like he played yesterday. It sets up well storyline wise for him to put the stamp on this MVP.
Yeah, and you know what? Yesterday I was notified I actually have the NL MVP vote this year.
I haven't had one
in a while. I know I voted for Ryan Braun and he won, and I can't remember the others. Even though I've been doing this for 30 plus years, I think I've only had the MVP vote maybe 5 times. I mean, just the luck of the draw. I'm not blaming anyone, and it's fine. Whatever vote I get, I'm happy with. I don't complain, but it's certainly an honor to have the MVP vote, and I'm certainly it's certainly early, so you know we don't know who the MVP is going to be. But I'll just say this: Tatis has been fantastic this year. That much I'll say.
Spoken like a man that has a vote. So we'll slide past it. But can I got to ask you about the change of position. I thought all along, even as he started to experiment with center field, that if they truly wanted to maximize him, it would have to be in right field. I don't know that I buy the injury, the prevention of injury by moving into outfield, especially if he was playing center field. I just don't see that being the case. But certainly for the season, the rest of this season, if you're trying to maximize this roster that you have, I think right field suits him best at this point.
Well, you know better about the roster. Obviously, Cronenworth and Kim can play shortstop, so they have guys who can man it. And, to me, I love him as a shortstop. To me, that's a premium position. I'd love to see him go back there. If it is about the injury, I'm all for it. I mean, you got to protect this guy. Got to keep him on the field, not only for the Padres, but for the game of baseball. He is the most exciting player in the game. I mean, Baez, pretty exciting, but not the star that this guy is. So let's keep him healthy. If that's the reason, I'm all in favor of it.
I'll say this. I agree with you 100%. I personally would like to see him remain at shortstop, but you get the sense you acquire Adam Frazier. So that already gives you more infielders than you have positions for at that point. And I think the first game they had Adam Frazier in left field, and he misplayed a ball, and he hasn't been out there since. So clearly I think they feel he's more comfortable at second. So you got to have his bat in the lineup. He's one of the best hitters in the league. So he's got to play second, and that puts you in a conundrum with Cronenworth. And so I think the injury in some ways presented an opportunity for them to kind of ease what you had at the infield position, because Fernando certainly has to play. That's a no-brainer, right? Cronenworth, the way he's played this year, it's an all-star. You want his bat in the lineup, and I think the best way at this point for the 2021 season is to have him in right. But I agree. Eventually, you'd like to see him back at that premium position. It just seems out of place to have him stand there longer than this year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I think it fits the roster better. I mean, obviously, he's made a number of errors this year, led the league. I think he still does. But, I mean, long-term, he, for the sake of baseball, we'd love to see him at shortstop if he can handle it. So, you know, I don't know. It's harder for me to say. You played the game. You played center and right. You've played all the outfield positions. I would think shortstop is more of a grind, but you certainly got to test your arm as a right fielder. So I'm not sure that it's that much better. But if it's, you know, if it keeps him on the field, I'm in favor of it. I'm not sure that it makes that much of a difference there. But
I agree with that, because when you think about it from an outfielder's perspective, When you do have to dive in the outfield, you're usually running full speed a lot of times. Whereas the infield, I don't know that you ever get the top end speed when you dive. So the impact is different in the outfield than it is in the infield. Now, you won't dive as much, I would think, in the outfield. But when you do, your body takes a toll on your body. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out.
You know what I would say? Just one thing I'd like to interject is I covered a guy as a beat writer for the Angels who never dived, and that was Devon White. I'd like to tell him, don't dive. You know, I don't know if you can do that. I mean, Devon White is one of the best fielding outfielders I've ever seen. And he just had a knack. He caught it on a shoestring, you know, every time. I mean, I don't think he gave up too many extra hits by not diving, but he never did it, and he stayed healthy. And, you know, it's not such a bad thing to stay healthy. You remember Bobby Abreu certainly played in your era, and he never went near the wall, right? You know,
It
might be hard to tell Tatis all this, but, you know, if the idea is to keep him healthy, don't go near the wall, don't dive, and just do your best without those two things.
A, at 20, 21, 22 years of age, I'm not sure he can actually turn that off. He seems to only play at one gear. Maybe he can now. And then secondly, Devon White is, I mean, that's like the most exceptional defensive outfielder I've ever got a chance to see. So I don't know if it's a fair comparison, but certainly the idea is good outfielders.
Is Not fair.
Certainly good outfielders. Certainly good outfielders don't have to dive. So hopefully Fernando's is that good and he doesn't have to worry about it. Now, in terms of their playoff chances, I know, as I said, they haven't played well. And I think one of the things you have to do is kind of look at it from a higher view and kind of see everything. I have a hard time seeing them not making the playoffs. Now, the division may be out of reach at this point, but certainly the playoffs, I think, is the Padres to lose at this point.
You would think so. I mean, I kind of counted them in as a certainty at some point, but you know, Cincinnati and now St. Louis are not all that far behind, and they have a major advantage being in that Central rather than the West. You know, they're not going to have as many games against San Francisco and the LA, are clearly the two best teams. I mean, let's stop pretending that San Francisco is some kind of fluke. they're a great team, and they've added Bryant. The Dodgers were a ridiculously talented team, and they added the two most impactful players at the deadline, and San Diego's got to deal with them. And at this point, you know, believe it or not, Arizona is way better than the Cubs. You know, I mean, the Cubs, I'm not sure the Cubs are going to win another game. You know, they gave away their team just as the Nats did. And being in that Central is a big advantage, fair or not. You know, that's one reason Dan O'Dowd always said, let's do the balanced schedule. Let's make it fair. And, you know, a GM would think that way. You know, to me, it's exciting to play teams in your own division. But, you know, the Dodgers and the Giants are just, you know, they're better than anyone in this Central. I know Milwaukee's record is right up there with the Dodgers, but, you know, let's face it, the Dodgers and the Giants are the best, and right now the Cubs and the Pirates are the worst. So San Diego has, you know, they have an edge, but it's not going to be easy.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. That Central piece of it is going to be something to watch, because as you mentioned, Reds will get a chance to play the Pirates and Cubs a lot down the stretch. That seems to be the team that's closest to the Padres. And as we speak, it looks like Ken Rosenthal is reporting that the Padres are nearing a deal with Jake Arrieta. Not complete it, but that is what the rumor is. And that just goes to show you how much I think the Padres are in need of starting pitching. Jake Arrieta hasn't had the year that we normally have seen from Jake Arrieta in the past. But certainly the Padres are at a point now where they just need somebody who can go out there and pitch.
Absolutely. They do. I mean, the Giants didn't have room for Aaron Sanchez, and he's actually been better. I'm not sure he's ramped up at this point, but he's got an injury questions. But, you know, I'm a little surprised they're jumping on Arrieta, although we'd heard this for a few days. He obviously was not good in Chicago, and that just shows you where San Diego is right now with Paddock out, with Darvish out, at least for the moment. You know, they're very thin in the pitching ranks, and that's another reason to worry about them.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. Beginning of the year, they had a glutton of pitching. Now they are down to really two starters, two healthy starters in this rotation. Let's slide to the American League East, because all of a sudden this race, I think, has gotten more interesting. Tampa goes out, they make the deal for Nelson Cruz, which I think is a home run move. And it just seemed to kind of come out of nowhere. However, Chris Sale comes back for the Red Sox. He looks dominant yesterday. The Yankees all of a sudden seem to be playing better baseball, although there may be some issues at the back end. This race is starting to heat up, John.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can't count out the Yankees at this point. I'd already counted out the Yankees. In fact, I doomed them. We play a game on MLB Network, MLB Now show with Brian Kenny, in which you say whether you're concerned, panicked, or doomed. And I'm going to blame peer pressure on this to do a doom. But I doomed the Yankees a month ago or more, and I have to undo. Is it possible to undoom somebody now? I don't know. They're in the race.
That's going to be tough.
Yeah, it's really, revival is tough. It's not easy, but right now it's a three-team race, I think. I mean, the Rays have had some real blips, and the Red Sox were struggling. They got Sale back, which is huge. I think that gives them an opportunity to perhaps get in there, and Yankees are still alive. And I will say that I did just hear Arrieta will go to the Padres, so that report is correct. So just wanted to add that. But, I mean, it's great that the races are heating up. St. Louis back in it. The Yankees back in it after being doomed. And, you know, it looked like we had our 10 teams a month ago. And it's good to see some competition.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think Chris Sale coming back, I think that's just the kind of shot in the arm they need, especially if he's going to look like he looked yesterday in his return. Now, the Yankees, I mentioned the back end part. Britton was quoted as saying, their closer was quoted as saying that, you know, he basically told Aaron Boone that he didn't deserve to be the ninth inning guy. Other guys deserve it. Now, in my mind, even if you think he's wrong at this point, he's already conceded it in his head. I don't know if you can run him back out there as a closer, at least right now.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think you can't. I mean, you would know better than me. You've been in major league clubhouses as a player. I mean, I've been in clubhouses, but that's a rarity. Guys are not usually that honest. And, you know, in a way, I give him credit for his honesty.
No
he's
doubt.
Not ready to do it right now. And it's good they have other options. I mean, he couldn't do that if he was back on Baltimore. But being with Loaisiga and Green, you know, might as well be honest and say you're not ready to close right now. I think that's – I actually look at that as a positive.
Listen, I totally agree. I think ultimately what he recognizes is that there are other guys who could do the job better at this point. And when you're already trying an uphill climb, you don't have games to kind of, you know, figure things out on the fly. So maybe you put him in some different situations, let him work from there. But they're going to have somebody's got to step into the fold one way or the other. Because the one thing you can't have is giving up games late, especially when you're already trying to make the uphill climb. Let's slide over to the American League Central, the White Sox. They have seemingly run away with this division. I mean, you and I talked about it on my show last week. All the Tony La Russa chatter was quite loud when he got the job. Yet this team is seemingly running away with the Central. They are running away with the Central, and they made some moves at the deadline that I think make them very, very tough to take out early in this as they get into the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, there definitely was chatter, and I was part of that. I questioned that move. I mean, maybe I wasn't as loud as some. I just said it was a gamble. To bring him in now after 10 years away. But he's done a good job. He's certainly one of the AL Manager of the Year candidates. There's several good ones, Cash and Melvin and Dusty. And so, I mean, there are a lot of good ones. To me, A.J. Hinch deserves it, though, because I never saw Detroit going anywhere near this. So, but, you know, the White Sox, to me, are probably the favorite in the AL in the AL as a pennant winner.
I agree.
You know, top to bottom, I love their pitching. Number five starter, Rodon, hopefully he's healthy. Reports are he's going to be okay. Number three starter was Lance Lynn. He also was an all-star, so that's a pretty good sign. And right now you have the back end of number 8 and 9 of Kimbrel and Hendricks. And when you have two great closers as your 8 and 9, you're in good shape. Now, they haven't been that perfect the last week or so, but I mean, we know what they can do. And you know, the last time anybody had an eighth inning guy like Craig Kimbrel was the Yankees and Mariano Rivera in 1996 when he was the setup man for John Wetlin, and we know how they ended up doing, winning that World Series. So I think they're their favorite in the American League. I do think the best teams are in the National League, but I give the White Sox a slight edge in the American League. But you know, it's a wide open league, but I liked Hernandez. He's hit a lot of home runs at second base. You know, they're going for it. You know, they got an opportunity, and I like what the White Sox did.
Now, the White Sox, I like that team really top to bottom. I like everything about them. I think they have depth really at all the positions. This team is certainly going to be the favorite out of the American League when it's all said and done, at least in my opinion. Now, I want to kind of go back because you and I haven't gotten a chance to speak really on this show since the deadline. But this was one of the most exciting deadlines we've had in recent history. And I was very pleased to see that because so often baseball's deadlines end up just being a dud. There's a lot of talk, a lot of things that could go down, but don't go down. And it's not like the other sports where it's like just a slew of moves. However, this year, it was very much like that, John.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Looking back on it, I'm right in the middle of it. So it's hard for me to know. I didn't really even know how great it was until we got to the very end and people started talking about it being great. There was one deadline, I don't know, about 5-6 years ago in which Bud Norris was traded, and that was the big deal and maybe almost the only deal on deadline day. That was a disaster. I mean, I don't know what the hell. I mean, it was good for me because I wasn't too worried. You know, I knew not much was happening. I think Peavy might have been traded the day before. That was a little bit bigger trade, if that was the right year I'm thinking of. But, I mean, this year, total opposite. Fantastic. I mean, The Dodger deal, incredible. I know the Padres were quite unhappy that it went that way. They were wondering why they didn't get them, because I know that A.J. Preller and company wanted to get Trey Turner back as well as Scherzer. And it did appear that Scherzer was going to okay the Padres, certainly okay the Dodgers. And for whatever reason, like the idea of going to Southern California, that's his prerogative. He's 10-5. It's up to him where he's going. And that's just the way it goes. So Padres had that opportunity. It's, you know, hard to believe that A.J. Preller didn't get his man, or get his men in this case. You know, one of his few regrets, you know, obviously they made a lot of moves in San Diego, was trading Turner away. And I think that he would have found room for him. And right now we've got obviously their best player, Tatis, is in the outfield. Their infield is already good and pretty crowded as it is, but he would have been thrilled to get Turner. And my understanding is that they were willing to trade Camposano, their catcher, and obviously Washington was looking for catching. They decided they liked Keibert Ruiz better for whatever reason. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder. Some people prefer Camposano, but I do know many who do prefer Keibert Ruiz. You know, you can construct conspiracy theories if all you want. I mean, Mike Rizzo was hired by Stan Kasten, who's now with the Dodgers. I don't believe that. I think Mike Rizzo is has integrity and is going to make the best trade for his organization no matter what. Not going to help out an old friend. And he just liked Ruiz better than Camposano for whatever reason. You know, the Padres were surprised. Particularly that they didn't get Washington to say, to come back and say, we're going to do this deal. What's your last and best offer? And LA just did that deal. I think perhaps they knew at that point San Diego just wasn't giving up Gore or Abrams, and they liked Keibert Ruiz better than Camposano. And obviously you're concerned about the top of the trade more than the depth. So that's why they didn't come back to them. I don't know, but that made the deadline. That trade was unbelievably great to see two impactful players traded like that. But obviously Kimbrel going cross town, and so many teams not giving up when you would think they were maybe not out of it, but close to out of it. The Braves going for it, the Phillies going for it, Toronto going for it, the Yankees going for it with their big moves. And Rizzo, obviously a big star with the Cubs, going to the Yankees, and you get Bryant going to the Giants. You had Baez going to the Mets. So, you know, let's credit, in a way, the Cubs and the Nats. When they conduct a sale, they really conduct a sale. And that really made the deadline, was that those two teams just trading away all of their best, basically all of their best pieces. And, yeah, probably the best deadline we've seen, at least in my memory.
Yeah, thank you to the Cubs and the Nationals for not playing well right before. That really sealed the fate for their team. On the Padres deal, Kevin Acey of the San Diego Tribune wrote a story about it. There seemed to be some type, at least from what I read and what I've heard, it seemed to be some gamesmanship somewhere in there, because there is no doubt. I was in the Nationals organization when Trey Turner arrived his very first day, and he knew that I had San Diego connections. So we started talking, and one of the things I remember him telling me was, at that point, even then, A.J. Preller was trying to get Trey Turner back and realized, you know, he thought he had made a mistake about it. So so it's not a surprise to hear that at all coming from you. But you're right. This was a tremendous trade deadline. And you're right. We should thank the Nationals and Cubs, because Baez goes, Bryant goes, Kimbrel goes. We already talked about Scherzer. Daniel Hudson comes to San Diego. I mean, they were open season, and they really, I think, possibly made the deadline what it was without a doubt. Now, on the flip side of that, John, speaking of the Cubs and Pirates, I mean, they don't look like they're good. I think you said at the beginning of the show, it doesn't look like they're going to win another game, especially the Cubs at this point in the season. This isn't necessarily great for baseball. I know it was great for the deadline, but is it good to have teams rebuilding and doing it in a fashion that it looks like it's going to take a while?
Yeah, you have to wonder about that. I mean, I get it strategically for the team. If you're going to sell, you're not going to be in it. You know, you might as well really sell. But you wonder about for the game, because now we have all these races, all these teams that did go for it are now in it. No question about it. Those teams I talked about, Toronto and Philly, Yankees, Atlanta. Atlanta is now in first place out of nowhere. So, I mean, certainly it made the races, but now we have teams that are really non-competitive. You know, whether you want to call them patsies, the game's gimmies, whatever. I mean, sometimes when teams make a few trades, they bring up kids and there's a little more enthusiasm. The team actually stays the same or gets better. But I mean, the Cubs are just a disaster. I mean, I texted with somebody over there and said, boy, you're not used to losing. He said, well, this is beyond losing. You know, I mean, this team is, it's a disaster right now. They got to play out the string, and, you know, maybe they'll like the fact that their draft choice is going to be very high. I don't know. I mean, I haven't checked lately. Can they finish with an even worse record than Arizona? I don't know, but they're going to be way down there. I mean, the Nats are not competitive also. I just saw them against the Mets. You know, they had some leads. You know, they couldn't hold them. They traded away their two top relievers in Hudson and Hand, in addition to Turner and Scherzer, who's one of the, you know, he's an all-time great, and Turner is one of the top, certainly one of the top 20 players in the game. And, I mean, they made the rich much richer, and the poor became, I mean, basically homeless at this point. I mean, they're just awful. You got six or seven teams that are really non-competitive at this point. And, you know, I you know, you got to think of yourself when you're doing this. So I'm not blaming the Cubs and the Nets, but it's not great for baseball, I don't think.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. And there's really going to, if the owners are successful in this collective bargain agreement of bringing the extra playoff teams in, it's going to be really no excuse for these teams to be rebuilding that long when you can compete for one of the many playoff spots at this time. Okay, before we get out of here, though, John, I got to get your thoughts on the Field of Dreams game. That turned out to be a terrific game. I got to be honest, I thought the beginning of it, that when they coming out of the cornfields and Kevin Costner is just, it was very movie-like, in my opinion. But I did think the game, and for some reason, watching balls fly into the cornfields, I don't know why, it excited me. I enjoyed that part thoroughly. But you know, it seemed like this is going to be something we see, moving forward.
Yeah. You know, I guess you thought it was corny. Sorry. No pun intended.
There you go. I tried to stay away from the word, but yes, that's exactly what I thought.
Thank you for laughing. Before I get to the Field of Dreams, and you're not like this, you're a very modest guy. I mean, you really downplay your major league career and all that. Let's pat ourselves on the back a little. Our predictions look incredible at the start of the year. We need to replay that early podcast, I think might have, I'm not sure what was our first one this year, but we both had the Braves. Now they're in first, at least as we record this. You had the Astros, I had the A's. They're in a dogfight. It's one of those two. We both had the White Sox. I mean, the only team, am I missing one, we missed on was the Giants, who might be the best.
Which everybody missed on, by the way.
Everybody missed on, but we didn't have them, to be fair.
No.
So anyway, we are great. You're not going to say it, but I will. I'm going to do the Ricky. And you're going to be more like Tyler Gilbert. I'm going to be more like Ricky Henderson. We are great. So anyway, back to the Field of Dreams game. I just had to get that in there. You know, I'm more of a Bull Durham person. You know, you got to have an imagination to really appreciate fully the Field of Dreams. I like the movie. It was pretty cool. It was an interesting plot, and you know, it was a good movie, no question about it. But I'm more of a Bull Durham. I'm more of a realist kind of guy.
That's right, me too.
That's not even that realistic, really. I'm sure, but
closer. It's a little closer.
But you know, as far as the game goes, you know, I love the guys walking out of the cornfield. I thought that was cool. But really what made it for you and I, at least you and me, is the fact that it was a great game because we're really into the game. You know, it was so exciting and so many home runs in the cornfield, and then the Stanton home run giving the Yankees the lead. And then the Tim Anderson, who's a fantastic, colorful personality, and he knew he got it, as he said, and hitting the walk-off game winner. So that's redundant, but the game winner. And yeah, that's what made it for us. And I would like to see it again, and I don't know if they can duplicate that. I know that David Ross accidentally revealed that the Cubs are going to be in it before trying to backtrack, but I'd like to see the Cubs and the Cardinals, two teams out there in the Midwest, play, and two rivals. We'll see what the actual game is. Mike Schilt hasn't given it up yet, and we don't know if it's really the Cardinals, but we'd like to see it again. And, you know, the game made it for me, just like you, I think.
Yeah, they'll have to got some big shoes to fill, whoever is in that game. I'll tell you real quick, I could put myself in Tim Anderson's shoes from a emotional standpoint. You just finished watching the Yankees hit two bombs, guys hopping over the gate, and I'm sure that made him feel some type of way. So when he finally hit that ball and he knew it was gone, I enjoy the kind of, as you said, colorful attitudes that these guys have. I truly enjoy it. It was fun to see him going around the bases. It was fun to see him hype like that. Mm-hmm. Perfect game at the perfect place. And that's where we'll leave it for this week. We thank you guys in for tuning in to Big Time Baseball. Make sure you check back every Monday for new episodes. Myself, John Heyman, Cody Decker, we are all here. Every episode is on the Odyssey app, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you find your favorite podcast. Leave us a comment and a 5-star rating. We'll be sure to keep the baseball conversation rolling. Until next time, for my partner, John Heyman, I'm Tony Gwynn Jr. We'll check you next week.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.